We often look at the big picture, but sometimes the most incredible things are happening on a tiny scale. Like how
Absolutely.
single cells know where to go. They respond to chemical signals, right? That's chemotaxis.
Exactly. Fundamental thing, immune responses, wound healing.
Yeah. And weren't Keller and Sigel the pioneers here back in the 70s looking at slime molds, Dictyostelium?
They were. They really laid the mathematical foundation for understanding how these cells aggregate, how they come together. It's fascinating stuff.
Okay, so let's get into the math behind it for this deep dive.
Right. And their early work sparked so much research. Today we're looking at one specific model. Let's call it Model 1.1 from the source material. It's a mathematical way to describe how cell density and chemical signals interact.
Got it. So in this model, U is the cell density, like how many cells are packed in.
Precisely. And V is the concentration of the chemical signal, the thing they're following.
Okay, and then there's this Greek letter, chi.
Yes, yeah, that's crucial. It measures how sensitive the cells are to that chemical gradient, how
Wow.
strongly they react.
Okay. And we also have A and B for like birth and death rates of the cells.
That's right, basic population dynamics. And then
Yeah.
handle the chemical side, how it degrades and gets produced.
Right. And L is just the size of the space they're in.
Yep, the physical domain.
So the goal today is really to unpack this model, see what it tells us about stability patterns, what these cells might actually do.
Exactly. We want to understand the long-term picture. Does it settle down? Do we get clusters? What about these spiky solutions the researchers talk
Yeah,
about?
spiky solutions. Sounds intriguing.
It is. Think of it like understanding traffic flow. Simple rules for each car, but you can get jams, complex patterns emerging.
Okay, good analogy. So where do we start?
Well, the simplest question first. Can everything just be uniform? An even spread of cells and chemicals unchanging.
Like a baseline equilibrium state.
Exactly. And the answer is yes, there is a constant solution. The cell density is A divided by B, and the chemical concentration is related.
Makes sense. But is it stable? That's the key, isn't it? If you nudge it slightly, does it go back?
That's precisely the question. Does a small fluctuation die out, or does it grow?
And that's where stability analysis comes in.
Right. Mathematically, we look at how tiny disturbances evolve. It's like poking something balanced. Does it wobble back or topple over?
Okay. And you use something called eigenvalues.
Eigenvalues, yes. They're part of our, let's say, stability checker. They tell us if those small nudges grow or shrink over time.
Got it. So, what do they tell us here?
They lead us to define a really important threshold, a critical value for that chemotaxis sensitivity. We would call it star.
Ah, a tipping point.
Exactly. And this CHUST star, it depends on things like the cell growth rate A, the chemical decay rate, and importantly, the size of the space L.
Okay, so if the actual sensitivity is below this Chester.
Then the uniform state is locally stable. Small disturbances fade away. Everything smooths back out.
Right. But if starch goes above star.
Ah, now it gets interesting. The uniform state becomes unstable. Those small nudges start to grow. They get amplified.
Amplified,
Right?
leading to patterns.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Leading towards non-unicorn distributions of cells.
Wow. Just because the cells are a bit more sensitive, that's a huge shift. Can you give us a feel for how char changes, like with numbers?
Sure. So imagine a simple case.
Yeah.
A and L are all one. And the charged star is about 11.97, let's say roughly 12.
Okay.
We keep A in one and make the space bigger, say L6. Now its star plummets to around 4.01, much lower.
Whoa, big difference.
Yeah, or change A to 2, O to 3, keep L6. Char drops again to about 3.30.
So the environment, the space available, really matters for when things might get unstable.
It really does. It significantly affects that threshold.
Okay, so things become unstable above star. The uniform solution isn't the preferred state anymore. What happens instead? Where does the system go?
Well, this leads us into the idea of bifurcation.
Bifurcation, like a splitting.
Exactly. Think of it as a fork in the road for the system's behavior as we tune that parameter. When Pernsch crosses certain critical values, like star, the whole picture of possible solutions can change.
New possibilities open up.
That's right. Specifically, the research points to something called a pitchfork bifurcation.
Pitchfork.
Yeah. Imagine the uniform solution as one path. As passes the critical value, this path can become unstable, and two new paths branch off, representing non-uniform patterned solutions.
So suddenly there are these new spatially structured ways the cells can arrange themselves.
Precisely. The system finds new stable or maybe unstable configurations.
And can we tell if these new pattern states are stable? or what they look like?
We can. There are mathematical conditions related to coefficients derived from the model, let's call them micake. The sign of this code tells us about the nature of the bifurcation.
Okay, so what are the options?
You can have a supercritical bifurcation. Here, the new pattern states emerge kind of gently just above the critical, and they are stable. It's a smooth transition.
Smooth transition to a pattern, okay.
Or you can have a subcritical bifurcation. This is more dramatic. The new pattern states might exist even below the critical chutch, but they're unstable. When you cross star, the system might jump more abruptly, possibly to a distant state.
Ah, so one's gradual, the other's more like a sudden switch.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Subcritical suggests potentially more complex dynamics.
Yeah.
Maybe hysteresis.
Can you link this back to those parameter examples you gave?
Absolutely. Remember the case where ABL1, the critical was around 12.
Right.
That one shows a supercritical bifurcation. So just above 12, you expect stable patterns to emerge smoothly.
Okay. And the other?
When we increased L to 6 with the critical drop to about 4, that case results in a subcritical bifurcation. The math suggests unstable patterns branching off.
Interesting. More complex.
And similarly for the third case, A2, AL2, LAL6, with CHUSTAR around 3.3, also subcritical.
So changing the parameters doesn't just change the threshold, it changes how the patterns emerge.
Exactly. It changes the fundamental nature of that transition.
You mentioned center manifold theory in the source material. What's the idea there, briefly?
Basically, near these bifurcation points, the system's dynamics can be incredibly complicated. Lots of things could happen. Center manifold theory is a mathematical tool that lets us simplify things. It helps us focus on the few key directions of change that really govern the behavior right near that tipping point. It makes the analysis tractable.
Sort of zooms in on the important dynamics right at the critical moment.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, so these patterns emerge locally near CHUSTAR. What about the bigger picture? What happens as we really crank up, make the cells super sensitive?
Right, the global behavior. The research suggests these branches of non-uniform solutions, the ones that emerge from bifurcation, can extend quite far as increases. They might continue indefinitely, or maybe they loop back and reconnect to the uniform solution branch at some other value of my.
Wow, so it could be quite a complex map of solutions.
It could. Or they might connect different types of pattern solutions together. It suggests a really rich structure of possibilities.
And what about the solutions themselves when my gets very, very large? You mentioned spikes.
Yes, that's a key finding. As goes to infinity, mathematically speaking, these non-uniform stationary solutions have some interesting properties. First, the cell density stays bounded. It doesn't blow up everywhere. Same for its rate of change.
Okay, so it remains physically reasonable in a sense.
Yes, and the total number of cells integrated over the space tends towards that ab value we saw in the uniform state.
Ah, so the total population size is kind of regulated?
But here's the striking part. The distribution changes dramatically. The cell density U can become extremely concentrated in very narrow regions. These are the spikes.
Like almost all the cells piling up in one or two tiny spots.
Exactly. They can form at the boundaries of the space or sometimes right in the middle as interior spikes.
What causes them to form in those specific spots?
Well, the theory suggests spikes tend to form where the local carrying capacity, ab, is higher than the existing cell density in the sort of background state. This difference acts like a potential well, drawing cells in via the strong chemotactic attraction when CHUSH is large. They rush towards that chemical signal produced there.
Okay, that paints a picture. Cells rushing towards these chemically rich hot spots and piling up. Now, this is all based on the math. Do computer simulations actually show this happening?
They do, yes. The researchers ran numerical simulations using methods like finite differences to approximate how U changes in solvers for the wave equation.
And what did they see? Let's take that first case again. ABBL1.
Okay. For that case, remember CHUSTAR was about 12 when they set CHIP 5 well below the threshold.
It should go to the uniform state.
And it did.
Yeah.
The simulation settled into a flat distribution of U1, V1. Same even when they pushed closer to 11.96, just under the threshold. Still converged to the uniform state.
As expected, but above, say,
20. Then things changed. A single spike in cell density started forming at one boundary, X0. A sharp peak right at the edge.
Wow. And if they pushed even higher, like 40.
The spike became even sharper, more concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, it sometimes formed at the other boundary, X1, in their setup.
So boundary spikes definitely appear. What about the case with the larger domain, L6, where CHUSTAR was lower, around 4?
Right. So below CHUSTAR, say 1 or 3.95, again, simulations converge to the uniform state U1 V1.
Okay.
But just above the threshold, at Keeks 5, remember this is a subcritical bifurcation.
Right, more complex.
They started seeing non-uniform patterns emerge. Sometimes they saw spikes forming at both boundaries, X0 and X6. Other times, a single spike formed somewhere in the interior.
An interior spike, so not just at the edges.
Exactly. And when they increased much further, say to 20, the patterns got even more complex. Multiple peaks could form within the domain.
Multiple peaks? Like the cells are forming several distinct clusters.
It certainly looked that way in the simulations.
And the third parameter set, Pay2, A3, LH6, CHESTAR around 3.3.
Very similar behavior to the previous case, which also had subcritical bifurcation. Below CHESTAR, uniform. Above, particularly at highers like 20, they again observed spikes forming near the boundaries or in the interior, maybe near max to 3 or max 4, for example.
So the simulations really back up the theory. Instability, bifurcation, and especially the spike formation at high sensitivity.
They provide strong visual and numerical evidence for it. It's quite compelling how the math seems to capture this self-organization.
It really is. So just to wrap up this deep dive then, the key takeaway seems to be that the simple-looking model can exhibit really complex behavior.
Definitely. The stability of the simple uniform state hinges entirely on this critical sensitivity, CHESTAR.
And once you go past that threshold, patterns can spontaneously emerge through bifurcation.
Yes, and as that sensitivity gets really high, we see this dramatic spike formation cells concentrating in tiny regions.
And you mentioned this model, with its specific way of handling sensitivity, might behave differently than other chemotaxis models.
That's right. The details of the model matter. How exactly you formulate the cell's response to the chemical can change the bifurcation thresholds and the types of patterns you see. It highlights the subtlety involved.
So there's still a lot to explore here.
Oh, absolutely. Understanding these systems fully, like proving boundedness without strong assumptions, or figuring out the stability of these spiky patterns themselves, these are active areas of research. Anyone interested should definitely check out the cited papers for more depth.
It leaves you wondering, doesn't it? What do these mathematical patterns, these instabilities, these spikes mean for actual biology? Could this help us understand, say, how tissues develop or how cancer cells might migrate and form clusters? It's fascinating to think about the real-world echoes of these equations.
It really is. From abstract math to potentially profound biological insights.